We'd like to welcome you to the Planning Commission for September 24th, 2024. Thank you for joining us. It's fun to see people in the audience. We're going to go ahead and begin. Tracy Hill's going to give us the invocation, and then would you like to give us the Pledge of Allegiance, please, Chris? And Chris will be giving us the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, thank you. We'll go from there. So that's you. Would you do that for us? The prayer? No, the prayer.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful for this beautiful day, for the time which we have to come together as a community to discuss the matters of the city. We pray that we will be open to listen to comments and concerns and make the wise decisions for those in our community. And this we pray and ask in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Okay, thank you. We are going to open up some time for unscheduled public appearances. If there's anyone who would like to share with us, go ahead and stand up and state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes. Nothing. Okay, we'll go ahead and close that. For one of our consent items, we need to approve the minutes from our last meeting on August 27th.
I make a motion to approve the minutes from August 27th.
I'll second that.
Can we vote on that? Starting here on the end?
Yes.
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 Thank you. Okay, so we are moving to our action items. For the development code for the Howden 6000 West sidewalk and fence land use comments here. So we'll go ahead and begin, and we'll turn the time over to Rob. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Our first item is a potential development agreement with the Howdens. I think you're familiar with at least one of them. In short, the Howdens own property. It's their personal residence along 6000 West, just north of 11200 North, where the Williamsview subdivision is going, and just north of that. On either side of it are sidewalks. So on the north side is an old subdivision, Quail Creek, that has a sidewalk smaller than the city's current standard. On the south side is the new Williamsview subdivision, has the standard park strip and 5-foot sidewalk, as well as a theme wall. There's actually walls on each side. The Howden property doesn't have a sidewalk and has a 3-rail fence that's existing. There's been discussion. I'm not sure where that has ended up amongst them personally. Some discussion about them extending the sidewalk to connect the north and south. So there's a continuous sidewalk along the east side of 6000 West. The city would just have to grant some exceptions. The topography there, if you drive it, it falls off. It's about 4 feet of kind of a, not even a shoulder, it's road, curb, there's about 4 feet, there's a little bit of a fence, and then it just starts falling off. So there's not much room there, so there's not room to put the normal sidewalk, park strip, or even to really locate a fence that makes sense. So the request would be, if they're willing to put it in, that they can put it in without having to do, you know, retaining walls and filling and grading and all of these. Use the existing topography, put a sidewalk next to the curb, and put the fence right behind it. Because this is kind of a little bit, go ahead.
Sorry, are you able to pull up a map? Because I drove this a couple weeks ago and I couldn't, oh, perfect.
Yep. Thank you. Sorry, I should have just moved ahead.
Talk to this, thank you.
This is the area we're talking about, S-492 is just a little bit south of this. So as you go up, it's right where it dips down and it comes back up. It's at the bottom of that dip is the Howden property. So on the north side, on the left, this is the Quail Creek. You can see the sidewalks. It's the older kind. It's shorter, so 4 feet. Right next to the curb, there's no park strip, and you have the fence just a little bit back from it. On the south side, This is the new Williams View subdivision. It's muddy right now because it was right after it had rained. But you see the sidewalk is there, it's standard, and then it just kind of curves to meet the road at the end. And in the middle, there's not much. There's the existing fence. You see that's about 4 feet wide of that kind of vegetated area, and then it starts to fall off. So more specific, it kind of looks like this as a cross-section. This is what is being requested is no park strip in this area. Do a 4-foot sidewalk instead of the city standard 5. Put the theme wall, continue the one that will be along Williams View. They're going to install one along 6000. Allow that just to continue, but not have the normal setback that we would require because there's not really space. I mean, they could put the theme wall down. It's just going to be at the bottom of a hill. They'd rather just leave the fence if that were the case.
Williams View is which one?
Williams View is this subdivision down here. It came in last year. It's a 14-lot subdivision.
Okay. That's what I just checked. Okay.
It's just getting finished up now. So essentially, we just connect that subdivision sidewalk to the one on the north. So if there is a development agreement, it would be to allow these infrastructure to go in with those exceptions, and that, but that any future development of this parcel, which is a little over 5 acres, it's possible it could redevelop or subdivide in the future, that if that were to happen, the developer at that time would take out the sidewalk and then do whatever grading topography work would be necessary to bring it up to the city standard, and that we would record that agreement against the property.
And you're talking about the rest of the Howden property that's in the dip, so correct?
If that were to be developed in the future.
So quick question, when we passed what we passed about not altering the topography to accommodate, so that's in the spirit of that as well, right?
Yes. I mean, if that were developed, we'd have to look at the slopes and grades and see how to make it work with our current standards. We're not doing that work now. We're just saying in the future, when this comes up, we want the developer to know that we'll probably require that sidewalk and fence to be torn out and then put back in to the city standards, taking in account topography, slopes, retaining walls, all of those requirements. We're not just detailing. We're just leaving that for a future.
Is this sidewalk a requirement at this time or something?
No, it was
it's just something we want to be able to connect.
Have kind of offered if we can make it work, and I'm not sure, you know, maybe they'll decide that the terms of the agreement aren't what they want. I mean, it's a generous offer from the Howdens.
Okay, so it's not a requirement.
It's not a requirement, so it's kind of
being a team player to connect the sidewalk so that people can walk.
It's exactly that. And because of that, that's why it's the city gets a benefit out of it. Here's why we allow a limited exception. But when it comes to actually developing it, we'd require it to be brought up to standard.
So it'd be this or nothing. But
exactly.
But if it's later developed into lots or whatever, then the requirement would go on at that point.
Correct.
Okay. I get it.
So those are the proposed terms. Any questions on that? Because this requires kind of an exception to the city standards, we have to do this as more of a legislative process, which is why it's coming to the Planning Commission for public hearing and review and recommendation. Then it'll go to the planning, or to the council, not the Planning Council, just the council. We also have, not the applicant, the person, the man of the hour here, who can talk about it. I'd recommend that you would consider this, hold a public hearing, listen to Chris, and make a recommendation to the council.
So just one follow-up question. Why does he even need to come here? He could just do this as it is right now because it's not trying to meet any standards. He's placing some concrete in a fence.
On city property. Our right-of-way extends.
This is on the right-of-way. That was the piece that I missed.
Yep.
Thank you.
So the right-of-way extends kind of to where that fence is. So it'd be putting it in. I mean, theoretically, if you want to put a sidewalk just past the right-of-way, you know, you could put concrete kind of anywhere you want, but it wouldn't do much because it's down on a hill. And
gotcha. That was a piece I missed. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Then we want to open up a public hearing for discussion about this, and then we could probably have some follow-up questions with Mr. Howden. Can answer any of our questions. All right, we're going to go ahead and open that up. Okay, we're going to close that. Does anyone have any questions for Chris or things you want to go through?
So the alternative is no sidewalk.
Correct. I mean, this is a cost he would be bearing entirely on his own. So, yeah,
so the alternative
is no sidewalk.
He saves
money, or if he chooses not to do this. Is there anything you want to say?
That was my question for Mr. Howden. Why are you doing this? What is your real intent? I wanted you to speak for yourself.
I love being called Mr. Thank you very much. I'm Chris Howden, 11366 North, 6000 West. So Highland is this patchwork of unusual vistas, and we would prefer to have along 6000 West, have it just look reasonably attractive and pretty. And today, no children walk on the sidewalk. Everybody just walks in the road. And so, I mean, this has got a lot of ifs to it. If we make money out of the Williamsview development, some of that money we would like to use to make a sidewalk. But when the Mendenhall development, when the Dry Creek was put in, they raised 6000 West. And instead of sloping it, according to most engineering standards, they just did this pretty steep drop-off. So on either side, if you go look at it, it's probably, I don't know what the engineering design, it's probably a 4-to-1 or 3-to-1 drop-off. So there really isn't place to do it properly according to current code. And then Quail Creek is this 4-foot curb-adjacent sidewalk like you've seen. So one option is we just leave it as our fence and then dirt and, you know, carry on with life. Our horses don't seem to care whether there's a fence there or not. We thought it would be a good idea to have the sidewalk, but the only way to get the sidewalk is if it's a 4-foot one. There just isn't room to do a 5-foot sidewalk, and there's just no room to do a park strip or anything like that.
This is my running walking trail. This is my route. I say hi to the Longhorns and go up your road and finish up, and I'm always switching back on the road, and the only concern is how fast people are going, and I'm booking it to the other side or whatnot, and it is a huge exercise route right there because it has so many hills, and it's one way everyone goes up to Suncrest for cyclists and runners and everything. I see this as a very kind addition in interim, and I appreciate that you're willing to do it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, selfishly, we just want it to look nice so that from the top of the hill, you'll have the same color, that sort of gray stone that is similar to what they have on the Quail Creek side and going up there. I'll tell you this, one thing that I'm not a fan of is the current or the development agreement as proposed mandates something that already is redundant in our code. If somebody was to come in to develop a piece of property, by default, you have to go through the Planning Commission, the Development Approval Board, and they require that you meet current city code. And so to me, it seems a little daft to require an agreement that enforces city code when that's kind of why we have city code.
When I saw that, though, it gave me a little bit of peace of mind because I thought, well, I love that you're doing that actually as well. I think it's great. But when I saw the stipulation in there that if somebody comes and decides to develop it, whether it be you or somebody else, that would be in there saying that this needs to be to code. And so it gave me peace of mind, even if it's redundant. That's kind of how I felt about it.
I also think it's a little different because there's already a sidewalk there, so a developer that bought it might think that, hey, this sidewalk meets the city code standard. I'm not changing this. Versus if it was left the way the property is now, I think you would revert back to the existing code and say, what does go here? But I think the reason, I mean, that's probably why you're doing it is because you're putting something there that's going to lead somebody to believe that this is grandfathered in or it's good. They're just making the point that if it gets developed, it has to come out. I think, if that makes you feel any better about the redundancy.
It doesn't. But if you've actually been there, you'll see you can't develop this without doing significant earthwork. Because the you see where that red arrow is? If you go into that horse pasture, that's probably 30 feet or even more, 40 feet below grade. Sure.
But that's wondering, are yep. we...
We're never going to sell it.
To change the grade, the natural grade, because we were discussing that earlier, and we made recommendations on that. Where are we at on that?
So, no, we're not authorizing anything with a future development. We're putting, to Commissioner Abbott's point, a heads up to a developer that the sidewalk along 6000 West is not city standard. That's not a, even though we approved it going in, it would not, they'd still have to fix it. But what that looks like specifically, what the fill is, what the grade is, that would be all determined in the future. And while it is quasi-natural, as Mr. Howden has pointed out, 6000 West was raised, so that slope and area is not the historical low point. So we would work with, if this were to ever happen, not saying it is, or I don't even know when, just if it were, we would work with the developer, as we do with any other developer, figure, all right, we have our code standards on fills and retaining walls and all of that. How do we make all of this work? We'd figure that out in the future. We're not putting restrictions on it. All we're giving is the heads up of the sidewalk that's there needs to be torn out and restored to city standard. Now, they're not just going to come and demolish it. They're going to come and get plans and try to figure out how do we get the grade to work with this slope and how do we figure that out? We'll work with the developer at that point. Maybe it's a modified park strip. Maybe it's something that does stay in the future that, you know, maybe the future planner says, you know what, that is fine, 30 years down the road, which case, great, it stays the way it is. But whoever at the time we're reviewing it will be deciding what is necessary to meet city's code.
Any other questions for Mr. Howden? Okay, thank you. Any discussion amongst the commissioners? Are we ready to vote? Okay.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the proposed development agreement with the Howdens for a sidewalk and fence along 6000 West.
I second that.
All right, let's vote. Starting at the end?
Yes.
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 You're fine. It's the 250-page agenda item on
yep,
here.
Yep, it is. So we'll talk about the
yes.
item 3B and turn the time over to you, Rob. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. So this is an item that it does a lot in terms of there's a lot of red lines, a lot of code being changed. The substantive effect is relatively minor. The goal is to make code a little bit easier to read and to work with moving forward. So there is some... A little bit of inconsistency. We have a lot of different zones, a lot of different non-residential zones that have different site plan requirements. Between those, the individuals who review, make recommendations, issue approvals, hear appeals is not consistent. That leads to, you know, someone, Highland Mains, wants to do a site plan. I have to look specifically at their zone and read through a lot of code to understand exactly how that works. But in the CR zone across the street, it's a little bit different. And that's kind of consistent throughout. That little bit of inconsistency. We talked about this a little bit last month. I talked with the council. We received some support, so I went ahead and I put this together. And I'm trying to summarize a lot of the changes and highlight where there are some substantive issues for you to consider. I've also outlined some questions I want you to answer because that'll give direction to the council. So the major thing being done with these amendments is it creates a land use authority table that identifies who at the city reviews, recommends, approves, and hears appeals related to land use issues. It also adds some new definitions. It clarifies who the development review committee is. We talk about DRC all the time at city staff. We didn't really have much in our code that actually said who that was. That is just a city staff body that we a lot of times we'll have requests if someone says, I want to develop this property, who can I meet with to see what the requirements are? That's our DRC team. We meet weekly. We also add some definitions for those terms I just talked about. Reviewing body will become a term. Recommending body becomes a term. Land use authority is a term, and appeal authority. And rather, throughout our code, what we used to say, the Planning Commission shall review an application and make a recommendation to the City Council. It'll now say the recommending body will review an application, make a recommendation to the Land Use Authority. So in the future, if things want to change, we just change a line in a table rather than trying to find the code. So when someone wants to say, how do I do a site plan? We say, okay, you go to DRC for a review. You go to Planning Commission for a recommendation, Council for a final approval, and then our appeal authority, who is our hearing officer, if you have any appeals. It'll all be laid out that way. So again, there's a lot of times throughout various codes where it'll say grading will be done according to the city engineer, or the city engineer has to approve something, or the zoning administrator has to approve something, and that's not how we do it. We don't issue little approvals. It'll be like, we don't issue an approval of a grading plan or a utility plan. We, as staff, review the entire packet, make recommendations, make changes. In the end, it either goes to the Planning Commission or Council for approval, and sometimes you'll see staff will have items 1 through 3 need to be addressed, but we're not saying approve the grading plan. We're saying approve the entire application with or without conditions on it. So a lot of those little tiny, the city engineer will review this. We don't need that. We're already reviewing that. We don't need a separate approval process for it. And then we're trying to make it so every zone has the same process. So the first question, based on this kind of summary, is this amendment worth doing? Meaning, do you recommend generally as an idea, should we go forward with this? With kind of a general consensus, the next question I have, a lot of what I've been talking about is land use applications. Those are the administrative decisions. Those are the ones where you don't really have a lot of discretion. You're seeing if it meets city code and then issuing approvals based on that. The question is, should legislative items also be on that table? So we use consistent language throughout the code, even though it's not really the same kind of application. When someone comes in for a rezone, that's a legislative action. That's not necessarily something that will get approved. That comes to you for a recommendation, goes to council for approval, but the applicant doesn't necessarily get it in the end. It's different from like a subdivision where if they meet the code, they get the approval. I have kind of proposed putting them on the list just so it's all in one table. With some clarifications that even though these are legislative items, they're not administrative, just as a heads up to people. How do you feel about that approach? And maybe I'll just skip ahead a little bit and I'll show you. So here's kind of the first top of the land use authority table. So you can see accessory dwelling units, those are an administrative approval, comes to me as a zoning administrator. If I get it wrong, it goes to the appeal authority. Annexations are a legislative matter. They don't ever have to be granted. The terms and conditions of it are up to the Planning Commission and Council. The two little daggers, our little footnote I'll put in that says, this is legislative, not administrative. And you can see it just points out the process you go through is still Planning Commission, Council, and then District Court if you would challenge it. Do you like having those kind of put together onto one table?
Can I ask if anywhere on this table, since this is where any resident will be going to look for their process, if someplace you can explain administrative and legislative? So that's already understood to them.
It's not in there, but we could add, if you wanted to make a recommendation, I could add a little, you know, a little short explanation of the difference between administrative and legislative decisions as people go to review these. I already talked about legislative and how they're discretionary. I could throw in, you know, in contrast to administrative, if you would like that.
I think that would be really good up front where you're also explaining the acronyms. So as you open it up, acronym explanation.
Yes.
Define that and then.
Yes.
Hey, Rob, does that put us in a pickle potentially with the state legislature always changing their mind every 5 minutes and moving things around for us?
So
meaning some things that are administrative that may become, or vice versa.
So far, they haven't taken anything directly legislative. and made it administrative, what they've just done is overridden legislative authority in certain areas. Where before you could choose whether to have ADUs or not, the state just said, no, you have to allow them in certain conditions. So I'm not too worried about something becoming, like annexation becoming an administrative process or a rezone becoming administrative. It'd be more of, well, the legislature now mandates residential density is this at a minimum, which is kind of a separate issue.
And the reason I think that that little glossary or explanation would be helpful is a lot of times we've got people in sort of an uproar showing up for planning commission and we're not coming up with a decision. We're just listening and coming up with recommendations. They often don't understand that process. I just think it would be helpful.
If the commission's on board, that could be one of the conditions of or stipulations on your recommendation on this. That'd be great. So you're in favor of that. And then the next question is, I've tried more or less just to keep approvals the way they are now. There's a little bit of tweaking, but I wanted to walk through the land use table, see if there's anything else you'd like to recommend to be handled differently. So we have a few slides on this, because I tried to find every type of application we have in the city that is land use. So accessory dwelling units, I have a definition in the code of what all these acronyms are, but DRC again is Staff Development Review Committee, Zoning Administrator, ZA, that's me. AA is Appeal Authority. We have an independent attorney who's a land use expert we've hired to come in and hear appeals separate from me or anyone else. PC is Planning Commission, CC is City Council, and if there's other ones that come up, I'll walk you through it. So accessory dwelling units, approved by me, appeal to the appeal authority. Accommodation requests are a bit of an odd one, but these come up when someone claims that for reasons of disability, they need a modification to a zoning code. Often comes up in group home contexts. These have historically just been with the city council, so I've left it that way. Annexations are a legislative item. Sometimes come to planning commission if there's some funky terms, like we did with the one annexation. We talked about the roadway width, the Phyllis Smith annexation. It was a year ago. But we came to you because we're changing some of those terms before it went to council. So ultimately, the council still approves that. Application complete status. This is kind of a little thing. Every application that comes in can't be processed until it's complete, meaning they gave me all the information and they paid the fee. We have to have someone designated to make that decision, so that's me, and a way to appeal it if they think I got it wrong. So I have designated our Development Administration Board. That is a board a few of you have sat on. It's the new one that we did for subdivision, where it's the city engineer, city attorney, community development director, and two members of planning commission, kind of whoever says they're available for that day, because that'll be faster and in a decision-making process to hear that appeal than our appeal authority, and cheaper for the city. So architectural review, these are with site plans, you review the building designs, which you have done frequently. By and large, the planning commission has always been the entity that approves the look of buildings. We've talked about colors and materials and all of that. Couple of zones had it be council or planning commission and council in kind of a different way. Historically, we've always had the planning commission do it, so I have left it as planning commission makes the decision with any appeal going to the city council. Building permits, I make recommendations, but our building official, BO, is Jason Nelson, makes final decisions, and those can be appealed to our appeal authority. And then conditional uses, we have kind of three new sections now because we did that conditional use code change just a little bit ago about kind of minor amendments, if you recall. So the approval process for the permit comes to planning commission, goes to council. For accessory uses where they don't affect the real use, that's the kind of minor amendment type thing we're talking about. I approve those. Any major amendment goes to council but doesn't come to planning commission. Any concerns on this first list?
This is more on the table as a whole. I'm trying to look at it like objectively with pretending I don't know what I know. And it kind of reads, it doesn't necessarily read from left to right, like step one, step two, step. It looks like a reference, like, okay, annexation, land use, like that it's not necessarily meant to be followed from column one, column two, from left to right. So maybe like, you know, stage one or step one or whatever, reviewing body and then recommending body. And so that way the reader knows, okay, I'm starting, I got to start in the reviewing body column and then move to the right. And these are each steps in the process. But
okay.
That was, I could have held that till the end. Keep going.
No, I like that thought though. Thank you.
And just a quick, what is DC?
District Court. Okay. So on legislative matters, they don't get appealed to our appeal authority. Appeal authority hears administrative things. He's there to decide, did the city follow code and state law? That's it. If you're trying to challenge a legislative matter, it's you really can't directly, but you have to go through the district court. It's an entirely separate process. So this just gives people a heads up. You want to complain about an annexation, you're going to court over it. It's not a simple process. Yes, I have a separate table that goes below this of all of the acronyms. It's the annexation and all legislative items will be district court as the appeal authority. So we'll go on to the next one.
One other thing real quick, Rob.
Yes, sorry, go ahead.
In addition to like the, you know, the glossary or the and the footnotes, I think were really good. Before you came to this table at the beginning, I'm like, oh man, I hope there's some footnotes or some kind of expository information. The blank cells with just like the hyphen, if there could be some kind of noted explanation as to why that step is not necessary or being skipped.
That's a good point. A lot of times there's not a specific recommending body, meaning there's no formal recommendation that goes to whoever's making the decision. It's just we ask staff to review it, and then a decision's made. But I can add a little bit of explanation of why that's not there. Yeah.
Okay. Rob, under ADU, would you mind explaining what that is?
Yes.
Please.
So accessory dwelling units, we require people who want to, really anyone who builds it, but we often get most compliance when they want to do something with it, or new homes, when they try to build an ADU, so a separate unit in their home, either it has to be attached to the home, so over a garage, basement apartment, that type of thing.
Okay, so this is the funny,
this is the
legacy,
yes,
connected roof thing.
One. So those, they have to get it registered with the city, and we record something against their property that says there's an ADU here, and in order to use it, or a separate family, it has to be owner-occupied, the other unit. So that gets recorded, so I approve those. We're still not talking about detached ADUs. And if we were to go that way, we'd probably have, we could have like internal ADUs and detached ADUs as separate. We can always add more categories to this as needed.
I would like to have them separated so it's a little more clear.
Yep. So if that comes in the future, we'll probably do something along those lines. So the next set of items, development code amendment, the two dagger footnote is the, this is legislative, not administrative. This is when, like this, we're changing code. It goes to planning commission, the city council makes the decision, appeals to district court. This is one that's a little bit of a change. We have extensions of approvals. One of the things I'd like to propose, we've done this for subdivisions. Subdivisions have definite time frames that their approval is valid, after which it expires. We don't really have that for other types of applications. I would like to, in the future, add that in, so I'm kind of future-proofing a little bit. For subdivisions, extensions of approvals go to our DAB, the Development Administration Board, that Planning Commission staff board. The one change here is conditional uses have a little bit of an extension language in the code that says extensions, if they don't build in a certain amount of time, they have to get an extension and it goes to Planning Commission. I don't know that we've ever done that, but my thought, we could break those into extension of conditional use permit and extension of other things. My thought is it seems to make sense just to put them all together into one type thing, but I wanted to highlight that as that is a change. Any concerns with that? Fence and wall permits come to me. The little asterisk there says you might need a building permit for this. And that's under ADU as well. It's for retaining walls. They might need a building permit if they're over 4 feet. So it's a heads up of you get a permit from me for some things, but you also might need a building permit. General plan amendment, again, legislative, so planning commission, then council. Non-conforming use or structure. So we adopted this code a little while ago. Someone can claim, hey, I have this thing that's it's grandfathered into the code, and I want to get a certificate from the city that says I am legally allowed to keep this here. We have an application process they can go through that comes to me and then goes to our appeal authority if they think I got it wrong. Plan developments, these are all mostly all legislative things. The creation of a plan development is legislative. So that planning commission and council. Extensions, again, they have some time frames where they have to start their development within a certain time or it'll lapse and it'll be kind of unzoned plan development. That stays with council. That's specifically in development code as a legislative item, so that has to stay with the city council. Major amendments are basically a code change, so it goes to planning commission, then council. Minor amendments, and there's a list in the code of what those qualify as, are just a staff approval, so it's me. And appeals of my decision on that go to council. Any concerns on this set of matters? Okay. Next heading, and I tried to group some of these together where they made sense to me, property adjustments. So we have lot or parcel combinations. These are where people adjust a lot of our like open space sales, where they just want to join a little bit of property to theirs. That's a staff approval, so me and goes to council. Parcel boundary adjustments, these are...
Can I ask a question on
that? Go right ahead.
I know a couple years ago we were talking about open spaces and things that were, well, we were dealing with encroachment at the time. And we were making a map trying to include which areas the city was willing to sell, but which ones might be compromised utilities or other things in future. So is that included in that process? Is that available? Is that map?
So we don't have a specific like application for someone to say, I want to buy the city property. It's still up to the council. And that's.
I'm just saying, does the council now have a list of property that's open that they are willing to sell, and they've examined and made sure that there is no, we kind of need to keep this one for a trail or for utility access.
Yeah, so they went through, they did a lot of that. So we actually did this lot of parcel combination kind of process. Because of that, we got a lot of people who own little strips of land and they want to add it to their lot. But every time we used to have to take that as a plat amendment, which is a very expensive and lengthy process because it goes to council. So we just said, if you're just combining property that you own, it's not building, it's just, you know, a little strip of land, staff can do that. In terms of future open space sales, I know the council has talked about, there's some other areas they're looking at. They did a big push and got rid of kind of all of the easy ones. There's still more out there that they've been asked to look at, and maybe at some point they will. That's a council item.
So Rob, just to clarify, as an example on 6800 West, where Mulhaven is taking four lots and making three. So yes. Going forward, that will just be a lot simpler process, or are you saying it would still require the city council review and approval?
That one still requires city council approval, because that's when you're shifting kind of that many lots and adjusting lines between them, that is more than just I'm adding a little bit of property that I already own onto my lot. That is adjusting a subdivision, really, in a way. So there's a distinguish between that. You know, that could be something that staff would approve, but it has not been. And so you'll see in this code. So kind of the third one down is plat amendment, lot line adjustment, or right-of-way vacation. That one still goes to council for approval. But the other one, so a parcel boundary adjustment is if you have a county parcel of record where it's not in a subdivision, you're just adjusting something in it. That can be staff, where you're not affecting a subdivision. Or if you're vacating a public utility easement or a municipal utility easement, that can be staff-driven. We have an application form. When the pool thing came up, we talked about that. We have a process. They have to go get a utility approval for it. So we can do that as staff. The next two items are residential facilities, often kind of known as group homes. We have a section for those with disabilities, another section for those who are elderly. Staff reviews, council approves on those. The next is our sensitive lands analysis. This is a little bit of an odd one, but I wanted to throw it in there so it was clear to applicants that staff, meaning the zoning administrator and city engineer, that's what the CE is, have to make a recommendation regarding sensitive lands. It's not its own application. It's always part of a different application. Like with the Foxwood subdivision, they had a sensitive lands because they had a ravine going through it. So staff, Andy and I, had to review all of their submittals. We had geotech analyses. We had cross-sections of different, each of the lots being affected. We had to do that prior to them getting plat approval. I wanted to give applicants a heads up of when you have sensitive lands, you have to come through staff separately or in addition to any other application. And then signs come to me, permanent and temporary, but the little asterisk for they might require a building permit, which most of them do because they have electricity.
Rob?
Yes.
It's nice to see that the code being referenced here in the table. I was thinking before, were there any plans or do you see a need or use for making specific references to this table within the code itself?
I thought about doing that.
It's a lot of work.
It was more of, it's a lot of work, but not a lot of work because I was going doing the work. It's more of, it's a lot of times as you go through that long document to say, the land use authority, see table 2-whatever I labeled the table, and have that repeated 300 times throughout the code.
Right.
And just instead, that's why I tried to capitalize those terms so people know, oh, this is a special term, and then there's a definition for it that all points back up to here. So I tried to do it that way and reduce the number of cross-references.
Yeah.
That makes sense. To recommendation alternatively, though. So we're at the end of the land use table. Site plans. This is one where there's been a little bit of inconsistency between the various non-residential zones. So I'm just proposing to solidify it as site plans get reviewed by Planning Commission and approved by the City Council. Separate from the architectural design, which often come in at the same time. So we've had some, I think like the Patterson developments where they've had their buildings come in. Those materials are approved only by Planning Commission, but the council ultimately approves how that building is laid out on a site, where the utilities go, how accesses are handled, and all of that. So that's still the distinction between those two. With subdivisions, this is the big change we made earlier this year. So preliminary plats go to Planning Commission only. Major subdivisions, final plats, come to the DAB, that administrative board. And minor subdivisions, because they don't have a preliminary plat process, just come straight to the DAB. Variances are heard just by our appeal authority. I will sometimes submit an opinion on one side or the other, but ultimately it's a little bit different. It's kind of a quasi-court process. And the last one is a zoning map amendment or a rezone. This is legislative, so Planning Commission and Council. So that's the biggest change. And then the rest of the code is me going through in every other zone where it says the Planning Commission shall review or the Council shall review or staff shall review and changing that to just refer to these headings of reviewing body, recommending body, land use authority, and appeal authority. So it all just points back to this table. There are some substantive changes, and I've kind of walked through most of those. Architecture review is just Planning Commission. The council decides what counts as a rear or side setback for site plans as part of approving the site plan. That was something that supposedly the commission did, but you never really did do because the site plan always went to council, so I thought it made sense just to leave that all there. Appeals for site plans were a mess, so I'm just saying it goes to our appeal authority. Fences and walls as part of like commercial developments will be reviewed as part of site plans, but ultimately the walls themselves get approved by me, just like every other wall and fence in Highland. Again, these are just things I'm proposing. So these are things, if you don't like it, propose something different. Extensions of approvals will go to the DAB, like we talked about. And then I added some definitions and what the roles are of the Development Review Committee and the Zoning Administrator. And then I did clean up, there is some language in our conditional use process about how we transferred conditional uses and that was inconsistent with something we just passed recently. So I just cleaned it up to say, you can transfer it between property owners, you just can't transfer it between properties, since that seemed to be what our intent was previously. And then as I went through, and with the help of Councilmember Courtney, who sent me a lot of comments, I just found a lot of typos and things that needed to be cleaned up. So I've tried to remove a lot more references to staff or planning commission. This is an example of what I was talking about, where it says the proposed use and development of land conforms. You can approve it if, and this is one of what you need to show, conforms provision of this ordinance and recommendations of the city zoning administrator and city engineer have been provided prior to submitting an application. We don't need that. It's already part of the process. So I was like, just scrap all of that extraneous language so we don't repeat it ad nauseum. If you amend a site plan, it talks about phasing of it. It says each phase must adhere to original plan except as subsequently approved by the planning commission and council. I'm just saying the site plan land use authority. The council has to, if you're going to change your site plan, take it to the council as with your initial approval. Appeals for sensitive land issues are just handled the same way the land use application is, because the sensitive land is not a separate process. It's just wrapped into it. And that's the big summary of everything I have tried to do in this code amendment. Any additional questions?
I have a question, Rob.
Yes.
Back in your list of substantive changes, that first one, the CR zone architectural review, is that... I guess I have a question on why moving that from going before the city council to the planning commission. I always enjoyed getting the council's take, especially council member Smith, on applying the architectural norms of the day to the CR zone and what looks good and what doesn't look good. And I'd hate to see that out of the hands of the city council, but I'd be interested to know why.
So this was more of a, I kind of ruled, suggest this as a majority wins. All of the other non-residential zones, C1, town center, planned, the PDs, PI zone, the PU zone, the senior citizen assisted living overlay zone, all have similar things, but said planning commission does architecture review. I said, the CR zone is the one that was different, so I'll just make it in line. But that's just me making a call. So you could recommend back here, where it is architecture review, change recommending body to planning commission and land use authority to city council, if you want to make that recommendation. I'm just would rather not have one zone that is a different process from every other zone that does this a similar review.
Why is it? I mean, I know this predates you and us, but why is that?
If I had to guess without doing a lot of research, every commercial zone kind of came in, and at the top of the zone, there's always a description of exactly where it goes. It says, this zone shall only be applied to, and it gives kind of a description like, you have to have a certain amount of frontage on an arterial, and it's written in such a way that they clearly plan it to be just a property got this zone. I think every time that happened, when that code got adopted, they looked at it and kind of tweaked a couple of things of how they wanted to handle it based on maybe who was applying or who was on the planning commission and council at the time. So it ended up just a little bit different from the previous version. Because we had the first one, I think, came in like 98. We had our first commercial. Then it was 2006. And it copied it almost word for word with some changes. And it kind of just repeats that way. So I think it's just whoever adopted that time said, no, I want the council to be more involved in this, mm-hmm. which is great. A little bit different from everyone else has handled it. Any other questions?
So, I just want to say that was a lot of work. Wow. To bend that all into some clarity. Nice job.
Well, hopefully it did make sense. I do apologize for throwing a lot at you. But hopefully it was understandable.
It makes more sense that we've gone through it this way. So thank you.
So this is a code amendment, so I need a public hearing on it. And then after that, we can have further conversations.
Okay. We're going to open this up for a public hearing. Anyone who would like to make comment, state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes.
There we go. Sorry, Elizabeth Rice. I'm a resident of Highlands. So this is kind of more for Rob, but I study the developmental code sort of a lot. Okay. So I don't understand the difference. These are more questions than anything, and I have kind of three. I need to know the difference, if you wouldn't mind, between minor subdivisions and major subdivisions. And I'd like to know two other things. How many of those things are just relying on one person's decision? And the other thing, I'm losing that other question, sorry. How does this affect Highland as a whole? I mean, this makes it easier, I understand, for staff, maybe even for Planning Commission or the City Council, maybe even. But does this make it harder for the citizens or easier for citizens?
If you'd like me to respond. Minor subdivisions are essentially lot splits. So it's one property and it's going into two lots. So it can't be any more than that. You're creating two lots out of one. Anything above that, if you're creating three or more, or if you're building roads or anything more substantial, has to go through the major subdivision process. Three lots or more, or a public road or something like that. So minor subdivisions don't ever go to Planning Commission or Council. They just go to our staff board with two Planning Commission members on it. Major subdivisions will have a preliminary plat that does go to Planning Commission, but under state law, no subdivisions go to councils anymore. So that's the difference between a minor and major subdivision. In terms of how many things are decided by one person, essentially everywhere on here where you see zoning administrator is basically a one-person decision. But those are typically more routine things. And again, this is how it's currently operated. So accessory dwelling units, building permits are mostly one person. It's mostly our building official who does that. Conditional use, accessory uses, but not the permit itself, not any change to it. Fences, walls just come to me. Minor amendments.
Which has been that way in the past.
This is how it's always, right? These are how it's always been.
Because these are all administrative.
These right? are all administrative.
It's, none of these have changed. You're just organizing yeah. them so it's
Except
easier to
like
understand.
Three or four things where I kind of said there was a bit of inconsistency.
Yeah.
And I've consolidated them. Other than that, none of this has changed from how it currently is. In terms of how it affects residents, hopefully this is helpful. Okay. Again, it's not supposed to change the process. It's supposed to help give them a map of, I
this
want
is
to
where
do
I
this.
Need to go.
Who okay. do I talk to do it?
Okay. I always worry a little bit about having just one person decide anything, and I know it speeds it along. However, when I moved here 26 years ago, Rob, you need to know that my house was never at code. It took about $5,000 to bring it to code. And when we went back through, it was one person that was approving stuff that shouldn't have been approved.
There is a risk with that. It's a matter of efficiency, expediency, and budget in some regard. I know I used to work with some smaller communities, and they would have building permits come into their planning commission, every single building permit. But they were also a community of 1,000 people, so they had maybe one every month. We have hundreds. So that is something we can do. The Land Use Authority doesn't say who should it be. It just says, for Highland City, this is how it is.
Hi, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name is Doug Courtney, and I'm speaking to you this evening as a resident of Highland. I would just like to take the opportunity to thank Rob for all of the hard work that went into this. I think this is a significant improvement for staff, for public bodies, and for residents, that it will be much clearer and is a really good step toward getting to the point where people aren't going to need a lawyer to understand what our zoning code does. It's just the first step, but it's an important first step in the process. So, Rob, thank you very much. I really appreciate all of the hard work, and we've seen what a great output it is. So, thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate that. And it is, I don't know how you keep it all straight in your head one time and can grab it so quickly and put it in there. But I really do like this. We're going to go ahead and close. Oh, no, we're not. Hello. We'll keep going.
I just have some questions. So, Scott Smith, Island resident, City Council. I appreciate all the work. I echo what Rob said. I think it's nice to have it all organized. Explain to me permanent sign, because we've had lots of discussions over the years on city councils about the signs for businesses. Is that what you're talking about when you say permanent sign?
Yes. So the permanent signs are the ones typically affixed to the building, or they're the monument signs like the Wendy's sign or something where it's a little monument outside. It's a permanent installation that requires either attaching to a wall, putting in a foundation of some kind. So all those are permanent versus the temporary, which are the banners or the little A-frame type things.
So we need to discuss that more because we've had discussions about different sign types and different zones. So I'm just a little perplexed how that all goes to you to approve everything when we've never been able to agree on it on the council. So I guess I'm a little concerned. I mean, you know, for Highland Mains, they want a big, tall sign, and we've talked about all the signs around the C1 district and different things. I don't know if we've ever just kind of really come out and said there's one size that fits all.
So you're right. So there's a, and this is maybe just a little bit removed what I'm talking about here.
Sure.
You're absolutely correct, because there's been a lot of those discussions about like whether we should have the taller monument sign and how high that should be. Planning Commission might remember having the discussion on the amendment of that.
Right.
That was part of their development agreement and the master site plan. They wanted to change that and get higher. What this would be is, now that the council has approved a certain height for that, who do they go to get permission to actually build it? And that would then be me or and the building official for the electrical components of it. It's always, and we have in the code already a long list of, like, if you want to put a wall sign, you know, the ones that have the cubbies or something on it, the code has a percentage of how big of a space it can be on the wall, how high it can be from the roof. And that's why I have an Excel spreadsheet where I have to put in all those numbers to calculate it. So this is more of the what council's already directed on terms of size, location, height, all of that. I follow it. If they were coming to try to change something they had, then it would still have to go to council for it, likely as part of the site plan review. That
so,
still
so that's what happened
council.
With the Chevron sign. They wanted to make it nicer in a rock, but their standard Chevron sign was a different dimension.
Right. And we had a big discussion on
you're
that.
You're saying if Chevron had
if they wanted to do a smaller sign, that
it would have just gone right
what they
through.
Already could do, because there's a
but they wanted to do.
Head, but there's like a square footage they can have and a height they can have. If they were to build with that, then that would, by our current code, that still just comes to me. But if they wanted to exceed that in any way, I'd say, well, I can't approve it. If you want to change it, you have to talk to the commission and then the council about it. So this is the administrative side of what the council's already approved. It's not trying to change the, if they want an exception or change something, they still have to talk.
And it still goes through the appropriate authority.
Yes.
So one other question on your table. I really appreciate this. Right. Organized. This is great, and we're going to be talking about this Tuesday, I'm sure.
Yes.
But the acronyms, and they talked about a table showing what the acronyms are. But is BO building official?
Building official. Yes.
Okay, because I always thought it would be building inspector.
So, great question. There's two different roles. The building official is kind of the top. Underneath is the building inspector. The building official often does building inspections, but the building official's role is to review plans, make calls on what the building code requires, and then issue permits based on that. Then the inspector says, okay, did you build to these plans? Are you meeting the code? We have Jason is our building official, and under him is Grant, who is a building inspector. And so they'll both tag team the inspections based on time, but Jason is the one who makes all calls on what does building code require? What does, you know, are these plans sufficient for what I need? So that's still just one person, but it does show that the zoning administrator recommends on building permits, because he'll often come talk to me about setbacks and accessory buildings and whether they meet size requirements. So he'll bounce all of those things off of me for zoning things before he then issues his permit. So building officials, the supervisor, building inspectors are lower.
And just one last question. I'm sorry to ask these questions, but it'll save us time Tuesday too, whereas you're approving it. But, you know, since the state's changed how we go through the subdivision process, if there's no zoning changes, I think in the table it'd probably be nice subdivision approval if you just put with no zoning changes. Just a little clarification. I think that just makes it a little easier for people to understand. So, thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. Thank you for comments. And Rob, for all the clarification, the commissioners want to discuss anything or have any questions either?
I have a question. When would the accessory dwelling units be separated, if they were to be separated from connected versus detached? Would that be at another time?
That would be another time, because currently detached are still not permitted. Okay. I was going to give you this heads up as the communication later, but we're still following through our general plan update. We're putting out a resident survey, our annual resident survey, and we're asking a lot of questions about general plan topics, one of which relates to detached ADUs. If those are going to be allowed, we'll still have to go through the Planning Commission and Council to review that, make any decisions if to allow it, if they're going to be allowed, on what terms. After that, if we do that, then we would add it into that table as a new type of approval being allowed.
So are you saying that if it's detached right now and there's nobody living there, then that's okay? It's only when it's
approved. Correct. You can't have an outbuilding, except for three or four in the city that are grandfathered in. You can't have anyone living in an outbuilding on your property.
And when you build a new one, you can't have like a bathroom kitchen in it. Even though there's nobody in it, they also restrict that you can't.
How we typically enforce it now, so the three things you need for a building to be called a dwelling unit: a living space, so that typically requires enough room to put a bed and an egress window of some kind. Typically a closet as well. So living space, sanitation, so bathroom, toilet, shower, and a kitchen, place to prepare food. Just because of the way we have a lot of Highland residents who want to do pool houses, to have showers and things, so we don't restrict bathrooms, you know, shower type things. We can't really restrict living spaces because those are just rooms. We restrict kitchens. So the building official and the inspectors, they constantly are on the lookout for gas lines and 220 electrical connections going to kitchen areas, because as soon as those go in, that means you can have a stove and a range. Now, you can put in a fridge and cabinets and have it basically be a kitchen. You just can't actually cook real food in there. I mean, I guess you could get a toaster oven if you really pushed it, and I'm sure someone in Highland has. But the only way we have right now to enforce it is when they come up, the building official will ask them to sign an agreement that says, you understand, this can't be lived in. And then they'll be watching for the kind of cooking facilities and stop them from going in. So right now you can build outbuildings, you just can't have people live in them.
So this is really bizarre. But I have lived in many natural disasters, hurricanes, flooding, earthquakes. And it's been really great here in Highland for the last bit. But even in the churches, those have become refugee areas or evacuation zones, or you're taking in family because of fires. What kind of exceptions do they make for that?
I mean, that's actually why we have some emergency rules we can allow. I mean, in those situations, we have emergency protocols. We have to talk about doing an emergency plan with the city that we're trying to get updated and actually in place. In those kind of situations, you can kind of suspend normal dwelling things.
It's just temporary.
But it's just a temporary thing. And, you know, you try to provide sanitation. It's, you know, you care for people first, and then you go back to the code when it's reasonable to do so.
And just for clarification, the Planning Commission did actually submit a formal proposal to City Council about ADUs, and they declined, for whatever reason, declined to put it on the agenda.
Rob, quick question. Will this table and all this work that you've done, will it help moving forward as the city takes a look at the temporary uses and the home occupations and the utility facility supplemental regulations? Is that going to make your guys' lives easier in addressing those three areas?
Yes, and on a lot of other areas too. Kind of roadmap, and thank you for bringing that up. Home occupations and temporary uses are in our development code. The way they get approved is a little bit wonky right now and involves business licenses, and but those don't really match between our two codes. And so I just, rather than try to wrap all of those changes into this, I thought, I'm going to address that. We need to update our business license code. We need to update home occupations. We'll just do that later so people can actually focus on just those. But this will be easier because we can, whatever changes we do, I'll just point back to this table and we'll add a new line for home occupations mm-hmm. and temporary uses. There's some other things I'd like to do in terms of consolidations. This is just kind of the first step. I talked a little bit before about I want to create a land use table where we have all the different kinds of uses allowed in the city, single family residences, restaurants, and have it in a table and shows which of the zones is that allowed in, which ones is it not allowed in, all in one table, rather than having each zone be a little bit different. I'd also like at one point to have a site plan ordinance, like we have a subdivision ordinance that walks through how you do a subdivision. Rather than having to look for each zone what their site plan, we say, if you're doing a site plan, here's the steps for it. And it's laid out very clearly for people to follow. So those are, you know, in the next, over the next year, I hope to get through all of those things. But this is the kind of the first step of making it easy to start tweaking the code just for readability and understandability purposes.
So what Councilman Scott said, is there a line that says if you're by right, meaning you're not rezoning, this is the process, but if you're rezoning, this is the process on your list?
Currently not, but we did talk, the chair mentioned maybe we should have a little bit of discussion of administrative versus legislative. I have a little statement in there about, you know, these things are legislative, so it's up to the discretion. We could kind of expand that to say other items not marked as this are administrative, meaning you're not asking for exceptions or changes or variances. Right. If you do, then you have to follow the legislative. I could kind of expand that so it's clear. Yeah,
it seems like if you just had a line that said, you know, a rezone is, you know, legislative and you show those
yes.
steps. But you can also just say by right or mm-hmm. word that. And then it just shows that you skip right to the thing. But then you don't have to put like a footnote. It's two separate lines. A guy doing entitlements probably knows. This
yes.
is his category. This is his category. But some don't. Some own a bunch of acres and we'll figure it out, right?
So I've got a question. I'm not sure how to word it, so be patient. But the one thing I don't notice is not in there is if you live in a PUD or some kind of private development that says you have to go past our board of architectural review or you have to do X, Y, and Z to live on our neighborhood. I don't see that reflected in there, and I understand I don't know how you could because this is the city and that's them. But the following question would be, how does the city look at that or city employees look at that and know I need to recognize that for this area? Is that in a
HOA
in a application area that it's addressed? Or
we don't recognize it. We will give heads up. A lot of our applications, like home occupations, we have a bunch of statements that say, you know, we might approve this, your HOA may not. And our approval doesn't override any private restrictions you have, so we'll give people the heads up. But unless it's on a plat, there's a few places where we have plat notes that kind of involve HOAs. In that case, we handle those. But by and large, we will issue approvals that may not actually be allowed based on the restrictive covenants because the city just can't keep track of each private thing. So,
but they used to. So there used to, nothing got approved in the city at Bull River. Maybe it's on the plat, unless there was something signed from the HOA. Like we had people bring us their plans before the city would approve it. We'd look at it. And then for a while there, they were just approving it, but they caused such a conflict in the neighborhood because like the city approved it. And like, I know, but now you went through all that work for nothing because now this isn't approved. You can't, you know, put a three-story whatever in here. And so, but then it went back. And now it's kind of there, and it's not like half the people ask me about it and half don't.
The problem we have as the city is the state has put a lot of restrictions on when we have to issue a business or a building permit and what we can and can't regulate. So we will have builders who will say, you're asking me to make sure my cladding and materials are the right shape, that's on your zoning code, I'm entitled to a building permit. And we can try to give them a heads up of, oh, well, you're in Bull River. I know they have an active architectural review committee there. Say, it doesn't matter. Give me your business, you know, give me your building permit. I'll go deal with them myself. And then we have to do that. So, I mean, we know Bull River is active. And I know of other communities where there are HOAs, and I don't know if they're active or not. So,
on some of the rezones, though, don't they don't we require HOAs to be there to manage the open spaces?
For open spaces, sometimes they're on the plats.
And so then you help enforce it if it's that way.
Yes. Yeah. So we always check the plat. So if the, and sometimes, well, that's why a lot of the plats will have notes about you can't build fences in this area, or there's a height restriction that's beyond just, you know, the normal code requirements, because we can still enforce those,
right?
Which is how we look at it. Beyond that, we're a little bit more, our hands are kind of more tied.
Okay. And that's kind of where the comment of how does this affect the people in the city? If you are not aware or you don't investigate enough, you could get yourself in a situation where you start building and now the community sues you because you're not following the rules. So I understand, and it's, I don't know what you do with it. I'm glad to hear. I'm curious how we handle it now, what we do, because it's not the same as it was when I built my house. So
It's nicer when the city says no than when the HOA says no, because they're our neighbors.
I'm sure.
All right. Any other comments, questions?
So our recommendation obviously is approval of this. I did hear three items as potential additions. One was clarifying administrative versus legislative description. One was improving the readability of the table in terms of it's a process moving left to right. And the third was for subdivisions, particularly explaining when a subdivision is by right or administrative versus legislative. So just... that's what I heard. I don't know if there was other
and
things.
And even what Mrs. Rice included when she said defining what a minor and a major is, that wouldn't be a problem on the table either.
Those are defined elsewhere, but we could point to it if the commission likes.
Yeah, you can just put next to it two or more.
Mm-hmm. We could do, two or three or more.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the proposal with the, is it four changes now that were just mentioned?
Okay.
Let's take a vote.
I second that.
Oh, a second. I second.
Yes.
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 Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, didn't get to the Pearl's motion.
Here's the things that are going to be coming on. Future meetings, October 1st, City Council at 7 p.m., City Hall. October 15th, City Council, 7 p.m., City Hall. October 22nd, Planning Commission, 7 p.m., City Hall. They'll be discussing the land use table that we've discussed and removing commercial requirements for planned developments.
So if I could maybe explain that a little bit. The land use table is what I talked about earlier, is trying to consolidate all of the uses into a single table. I was hoping to do this at the same time as this, but this one became much bigger than I anticipated. So the commercial requirements for planned developments are moderate income housing plan that went through Planning Commission and approved by Council. One of the three strategies we adopted talked about essentially allowing for other types of developments. And one of the kind of timeline goals was to consider removing the requirement that all planned developments have a commercial aspect as part of it. So Ridgeview, Sky Estates, 10700, all of these planned developments have part of the property is dedicated for commercial. So in the moderate income housing plan, we talked about maybe we could remove that commercial element to just allow housing of a different kind. So I decided we're getting towards the end of the year. I will fulfill our moderate income housing plan by bringing it to the commission and ultimately to the council to review. Well, planned developments often ask for higher density. That's why they ask for a planned development in the first place. They don't want to build in another zone. So it would be essentially allowing higher density through a PD without also requiring commercial as part of that is the thought behind it. Now, whether that goes forward is up to the commission and the council.
Okay. Thank you. And then October 28th is, don't forget, the trick-or-treat street for ages 5 to 7.
No, it's from 5 to 7.
5 to 7. I'm like, are we restricting? Because he's going to go. All right. Especially if the firefighters are out. No. Okay. Great. From 5 to 7. Thank you. All right. Anyone
like to make a motion? I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Let's vote.
Yes.
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 And I. Thank you.